M38 Introduction to Divine Cybernetics. Number 1A.
Well, I assume that you all have given some thought to the subject of the chart, to those levels of science, so that I can go on speaking as if you would know more or less the main meaning of the chart. The whole week, I'm going to talk about divine cybernetics. In the very first paragraph of the first booklet, that term, divine cybernetics, appears. And one critic, or at least many, said, this chap Max uses terms which are not even to be found in the English dictionary. Well, if we have a dictionary that is older than 20 years, we do not find this term cybernetics. But the fact is that 20 years later, namely now, there are not only thousands of books on cybernetics and tens of thousands of articles on cybernetics. There is a whole library on cybernetics. There is a big dictionary on cybernetic terms. So you see that within 20 years we've witnessed that a new form of thinking has arisen within 20 years and has gathered such momentum that we cannot think of our age anymore different than of the cybernetic age. This is only one sign of what we witness today as what we could call a knowledge explosion in the world. A knowledge explosion in the world which Wernher von Braun, who is the chief of all these rocket business in America, has investigated and by a committee, and that committee has stated that the knowledge which we had in the year 1800 has increased by 100%, that it has doubled within 100 years up to 1900. That from 1900 it only took afterwards 50 years to double the scientific knowledge of the world. That after 1950 it only took 10 years until 1960 to double it again. And that it took another 6 years, 1960 to 1966, to double it again. In other words, we witnessed a situation which we could perhaps depict like this, that when Mrs. Eddy went to school, the scientific knowledge of what was known at that time was only about the 30th of what the scientific knowledge is today. That is, that knowledge has increased by 30 times. Or if we like to compare it to the time when John Dorley left us, the knowledge increased by about 6 to 7 times. Today, we have the situation that every year, 1 million scientific books are published. That today, if we took all the scientific books published in 1 year and put them one next to the other, it would give a library of six miles. Today are living 1 to 2 million scientists. The scientists that live today make up 90% of all the scientists that have ever lived. So that scientists living right now make up 90% of all the scientists that have ever lived. So we can see the intensity of knowledge that is brought to this universe and which somehow has to be assimilated by world consciousness, and you know that Christian Science really is based on consciousness and therefore cannot disregard what's going on in world consciousness. This intensity of knowledge is also brought out in a way that we have to be clear about it, namely that the new knowledge is mainly cultured and absorbed by the young people. It is the young generation that in the scientific field that is able to handle the new knowledge. You take, for instance, the moon program, which is interesting everybody. Those mathematicians which had to calculate the orbit of the moon rocket had an age of 24. Those or that one who had to calculate mathematically the whole flight program was a girl of 23. Those who had to construct the moon landing craft, whatever you call it in your terminology, a landing craft which could not be easily simulated on the Earth because all the conditions are different here on the Earth than it will be on the moon, and therefore to construct that needs a lot of imagination, a lot of new thought. That moon landing craft was built by a team of engineers averaging 24 years of age. So this, or you take all that staff in Houston checking on the flight, the average was 30 years of age. And yet they were already what one could call, veterans in the business, because they have done that already for a few years. So the question today is that if such an explosion of knowledge, which is going on in the mental atmosphere of the world, if that is so, and Christian Science is concerned with consciousness, can we be indifferent to what's going on in the scientific world? Are we going to behave like the churches have behaved up to now, all through the ages? All through the ages it was so that for many centuries the church was the seat of knowledge. It was the churches that built the universities and did run the universities. Until that time when in the Renaissance people began to think by themselves, and that wonderful period broke in of Kepler, Galilei, Newton, where they began to think by themselves, and the break with the church began. That break was nearly complete during the last century, and it is only now that more and more the tendency is to see that the universe cannot be split into a diverse of religion and science. It is the Roman Catholic Church that has always tried to hinder scientific thinking, new thinking, progress, until finally today we can witness that step by step, piece by piece, the whole doctrine of the Roman Catholic Church falls to peace because they have to give way to the scientific progress. So are we as Christian Scientists going to repeat that error? To repeat that error, to split up the universe, the one turned into worst into one, the one being, again into two, into a material science and into a spiritual science? Are we going to repeat the same mistake that we say, well, we have the truth and the truth is spiritual and all what these people and the world is doing is anyway material error and it's anyway false and so we don't take any notice of it? The result is that we estrange ourselves from the world. We don't take notice of the world, and therefore we can't expect the world to take notice of us. This splitting of the universe into a diverse is something which we have to overcome, not to overcome with belief, but cybernetics gives a new metaphysics which overcomes this duality of thinking and reveals that Mrs. Eddy's way of logic is the way of divine cybernetics. So you can see that we shouldn't hesitate to broaden our sense of Christian Science from the merely biblical religious sense into a scientific sense. Isn't it so that Mrs. Eddy tried to combine those two main streams of thought which the Western world knows, namely the Judaic Christian stream of thought through the Bible with the Greek scientific thought of logical reasoning? Her Science and Health is a combination of the two. I would rather say that the preponderance is not on the biblical side, but on the scientific side. She reasons with the reader and reasons things out. She doesn't want the reader to believe just anything. And so the way of presenting the infinite truth to the reader in her way is much more on the side of the classical Greek, which started round about the same time as the big prophets were delivering their message. Therefore, Mrs. Eddy's great question, must Christian Science come through the Christian churches? And she says it doesn't, it comes according to God's appointing. Therefore, it is our duty to be awake and to see what are the signs of the time. What is God's appointing? God doesn't speak just through the churches or the religious thought. God is universal and therefore uses every channel to pronounce itself and to build a new step in the scale of being. Therefore, I would like with you this week to re-explore Christian Science. We have perhaps put too much stress on the biblical religious side. I wouldn't really say too much stress on it, but we have given to that aspect perhaps more thought and consideration than to the other strain that was coming down the centuries to the scientific thought. But if we want to reconsider and re-explore and re-analyze Christian Science, we have to have some qualities which are absolutely necessary. Namely, we must have scientific qualities and not religious qualities. What do I mean by that? Religion is that which says, I have a perfect final answer for every question. Science is that which says, I have no final answer for any question. I'm constantly on the go. I'm constantly in process of reinvestigating, of reconsidering, of reaching deeper and deeper into the subject. Religion is that which has final answers. Science is that which tries to put the right question. And to putting the right question is a much greater achievement than to give a right answer to a question. Also, we must consider that religion usually asks false questions. Not any question can be answered. Most questions are false questions, and a false question cannot be answered how much we try to do so. But science is that which tries to put the right deep questions. Sometimes it takes hundreds, sometimes thousands of years to answer a right question. The few right questions which the Greeks have put, those like Democritus and Plato, have only been answered very recently in the last few years by the scientists. So you see, it takes some time to get an answer. If we want to reconsider and re-explore science, we must be willing to touch on some taboos. We must be willing to say to ourselves, up to now we have taken this and this as a fixed verity, fact, like the synonyms, the ideas, what the ideas are, and so on, and must be willing to reconsider if that which we have found out is actually so. Are you willing this week to make such a step, or are you going to crucify me if I'm going to say, let's reconsider, because they may not be right what we have been doing up to now, or they may not be sufficient what we have been doing up to now? And you will see that if we really reconsider Christian Science under the great development that's going on in the world, we find that the textbook becomes a completely new book. But it only can become a completely new book if we are willing to let go of some taboos. Is it something very shocking for each one of us to lose some of the taboos? To me, if I find out that which I thought was perfectly clear and right for 10 or 20 or 30 years and find out that they are not quite exact, I rejoice in it. I think that's wonderful. I don't feel that then I lose that for which I have been working and working for tens and tens of years, but I feel that it's crowning my efforts to find out that we have to re-investigate and restate what we have been seeing. The world as a whole is a tremendous crisis, is a tremendous overturning. The world sees today that we can no more solve the questions of today with the methods of yesterday. And so we must see that also in the spiritual, in our approach to the spiritual, there is an overturning, a constant overturning, and that demands really a willingness to use new methods in order to see clear what the textbook really is all about. This brings also quite a new problem, namely the problem of language. Language is something that is in constant process. I have said just before that 20 years ago the term cybernetics was unknown. Today there are thousands of terms in connection with cybernetics. A whole new terminology had to be found to express the new consciousness. And so it is in the spiritual. Mrs. Eddy used a completely new language compared with the language of the churches and of the Bible. John Dolly began to use in his last year a new language, I think some of the parts in his verbatim report of the Oxford Summer School was quite a new language. Then, at that time, he also told us that we have to demonstrate a new language, and that if we don't, he said, we shall fail, and that we can't use the terminology which we like, but that we have to take the terminology of the world and be citizens of the world. So, if we have the mind of Christ, if we have the oneness of mind, we certainly will find the new terminology, but we shouldn't be afraid to use it. If we are afraid to use it, then we are not advancing. Then we deep freeze Mrs. Eddy's revelation. Language is something which is constantly in the making. We can't say there was a wonderful language in the 18th century or in the 17th century, and if we could present Christian Science in the classical English of the 16th or 17th or 18th century, we would do well. We wouldn't. Every new idea demands a new style and demands a new language. And we shouldn't be afraid to see that. Then everything is in process. And you see, that's one thing which cybernetics will tell us this week, that we have to consider everything not as static ideas, as static facts, as static truth, as taking the truth of Christian Science in an atomistic way, but always in an operative way, always in a way of infinite progression and dynamic of being. Another point. When the atom was investigated and the power of the atom was made useful or destructive, one began to talk about the atomic age that has come upon you. And we have spoken of the post-war age as the atomic age, because we were so overwhelmed by the release of power that was inherent in the atoms. But today nobody really who is thinking in the scientific world, it's not my opinion, is of the opinion that this is the atomic age. They say it is the cybernetic age, because cybernetic is a much vaster field, and a field with an enormously more, with enormously greater impact on the whole world than the atomic power. So, if we are living in the cybernetic age, and we not even know the term cybernetic, then something is wrong with us. Then something is wrong with the world. Because we cannot live in a world that is managed by cybernetics and be blind towards it. If we are blind towards it, mankind will become very soon the slave of cybernetics. Just as in earlier time, the slaves were the slaves of muscular power and were ill-used with their muscular power, so today or in the future, those who know about cybernetics will misuse the great mass of people which do not know what cybernetics is and does to mankind. There will be the mental slaves that just will trod on in the world and become a new class of slaves. That's what the big thinkers all are afraid of. And they ask us to rethink, to change our consciousness so as to be aware of what's going on. Naturally, a new world consciousness is also asking for new methods of dealing with that world consciousness and handling, and asks for new laws concerning a new state of consciousness. Let me just take as an illustration, up to now I more or less speak about the worldly side of cybernetics, because spiritual teaching must be through symbols, and I take now the symbols from the world. And you can see, for instance, if we take a symbol from physics. We all have been brought up, most of us, if I look around, have been brought up in physics as solid matter. And we all have been instructed in the laws of causality governing solid matter. Then there was a chap in a little position in Bern doing a job which didn't interest him, and he was thinking in the evening over and over if really Newton was right. He was questioning. See, that's the scientific thought which we must culture. Questioning taboos. Questioning Newton's law, which was governing already every factory, all mechanism and everything. And he was questioning and questioning that very simple law of gravitation until he found out that there is a flaw in it. And that law is right in a certain way, but insufficient. That man is called Einstein. And he restated that law of gravitation on a higher plane as the law of relativity, finding out afterwards that this law of relativity is of greatest import, which he didn't know at the beginning, of greatest import for everything that happens within the realm of the microcosm. So what has been right and in regard to fixed laws in the macrocosm, Einstein found out was not right when it comes to another realm, the realm of the microcosm, where everything happens in leaps or jumps spontaneously, and that therefore the law of spontaneity reigns there, that other dimensions have to be taken into calculation, like time. And he brought a complete revolution. You could say, or we could say, well, that's wonderful for a big man like Einstein and for the physicists, but we people, from the simplest to the greatest, have to suffer or joy what he has been brought. Without his theory, we couldn't have the atom bomb, we couldn't have calculated the atom bomb, and we have it. We have to live with it. And our whole politics is engaged with it, and everything is engaged with it. We can't say what happens in the world and what these big thinkers are thinking. That's wonderful, but that's up in their clouds. But we simple people, we have to see how we get along from morning to night. That's not right. See, that's the false attitude which can't go on any longer. That's the rebellion of the time, which is not the rebellion of the youth, but which is the overturning from a state of consciousness which is outdated into a new state of consciousness which somehow we have to get familiar with.